like a library.
The House Committee on Education will come to order. Welcome. If you have a cell phone with you, please turn it all the way off for this hearing. I do know there are people listening online, and it makes it easier to hear if you don't have the static from the cell phones. We have a number of bills on the agenda today, a couple of announcements about them. We're going to start with House Bill 4134, and that's going to take a while. So if you're here for one of the other bills, probably we're not going to get to them until after 2 o'clock. Is that okay, Representative Frederick? And do you want me to text you? and we'll text you when we're getting close.
Or you can fight with the speaker.
Exactly.
Great. So we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 4134. Richard.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 4134 directs the Youth Development Council to allocate funds available to support community-based prevention and intervention programs and services based on indicators of need for youth ages 6 through 20. It requires allocation to take place by a public process to be reviewed biennially. It declares an emergency effective on passage, and the committee has been asked to consider the -1 and -4 amendments, which I will leave the speakers to describe. Thank you.
Thank you, and welcome back.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. It's good to be back. Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44, North and Northeast Portland, and Speaker of the House. And I'm glad to be up here today with Duke Shepard from the Governor's Office, because we've been working hand-in-hand with the Governor's Office on this bill. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about House Bill 4134 and the -4 amendments, which I will go into a little more detail. But more importantly, I think it's a great opportunity for me to provide some context of where this bill came from, why we're here, and what this conversation is about in context of previous conversations. And I also think we have an opportunity here to have a good discussion of how best to leverage dollars that are out there now serving at-risk youth and try to do even better than we already are doing for our at-risk youth in the state. So this is a real opportunity, so I really appreciate the amount of time you're going to give it today. There are many people here today, possibly watching online, who do really wonderful work in all their communities with at-risk youth. And I want to thank them, and I want to thank them for having a conversation about this. You've certainly had many discussions with people who have concerns, and I think that's good because every time you have a discussion, you learn something and you make progress. So I think we're going to have a good conversation here today, and I welcome that. Because I do acknowledge that bill has upset some people. It's about change, and that's scary, and I understand that, and so we have an amendment to address that. But I would also say that I hope the people that are doing the good work in all the communities across the state will take stock of the bigger picture here with this bill and look at the needs of Oregon's young people and put that front of the discussion. And the governor and the Youth Development Council have proposed a framework of change, which I think is achievable. It's focused on outcomes. It's talking about maximizing resources and respecting community engagement. So I'm going to cover how we got here, a little bit of the history of the Youth Development Council and this bill in particular, what are the ways things are staying the same and what changes with this bill, and what the -4 amendment will do, and then happy to answer any questions. So a little bit about the history. In 2011, we started down the path of an integrated pre-K through 16 education system with the passage of Senate Bill 909 and the creation of the Oregon Education Investment Board. We just had a conversation the other day about the OEIB. That same year, the legislature approved the state's 40-40-20 educational attainment goals. I don't need to explain them to this committee. You know why we did that and what those are about. I believe those 40-40-20 goals are not just about the education silo. These goals slice across all the major areas of essential public services, health, human services, and public safety. Oregon's children and their families don't live within service silos. And it's our job to serve them holistically at the community level. In the 2012 session, we continued the journey by passing House Bill 4165, which phased out the Oregon Commission on Children and Families and the local commissions on children and families on the structure they had. It established the Early Learning Council and the Youth Development Council, with the Early Learning Council focused on 0 to 6, the Youth Development Council focused on all the school-age children up to 18. The Youth Development Council was created to make sure school-age children and youth continue to receive support and attention. Money being spent on youth needed to be protected and not entirely subsumed by the important need of funding early childhood programs. Because as you recall, the commission system had early childhood dollars, had youth dollars, and we wanted to make sure that those sets of dollars stayed with the populations they were serving. Then last year in 2013, we passed two more bills. First was House Bill 2013, which was the Early Learning Council bill, set up the rollout of the Early Learning Hubs. And then also House Bill 3231, which established the Youth Development Division within the Department of Education and gave more direction to the Youth Development Council to develop state policy and administer funding for supporting community-based youth development programs, services, and initiatives. The Youth Development Council has a funding allocation proposal, and this bill before us this year is here because we directed them to do some work and come back to us. And I think a lot of good thinking has gone into the proposal, but they're here because we asked them to come forward with a proposal. In OLIS, there are three documents, well, actually two, that I want to direct you to. One of the documents has two pages. So they're identified as speaker flowchart and speaker funding allocation plan. They're both from the Oregon Youth Council, but they're listed under speaker. In the speaker flowchart document, you have two pages. There's a purple flowchart and a blue flowchart. The purple flowchart illustrates how youth dollars and youth outcomes were handled in the previous biennium and previous biennium before that under the Oregon Commission on Children and Families. The blue flowchart illustrates the proposed allocation plan and outcome expectations for youth dollars for the remainder of the current biennium. So that shows the change from the one system to the next. I think it's very helpful if you weren't that familiar with the previous system to see how they compare in terms of proposals, not only in terms of money, but outcomes anticipated. And to remind folks, the Youth Development Council was told last year to come back halfway through the biennium and give us a proposal, and that's what you see. And then the other document is the funding allocation plan, which I'm not sure if everyone's seen that, but I made sure it was online, from the Youth Development Council that lays out the rationale and proposal for community-based planning to strengthen our investment strategy in opportunity and priority youth, subsets of at-risk youth here in the state. So I'm happy to go into more detail on all of this history if it's helpful, but the important takeaway is that this is the culmination of a three-year process, and the bill before you today, House Bill 4134, is the result of work we asked the Youth Development Council to do as created by us and directed by our legislative action. I would also note that last year's legislation moved both early learning and youth development funding under the Department of Education into new divisions to facilitate integration of these important educational supports with our K-12 system. Educational success is not just about the classroom. The Youth Development Council was about supporting children and youth to address barriers to their success, whatever those barriers might be. And lastly, in its exit planning during the last biennium, the Oregon Commission on Children and Families recommended that the juvenile crime prevention dollars and the oversight of those dollars should be under the Youth Development Council. So there was a conscious recommendation by the commission to say, put the Youth Development Council, have the juvenile crime prevention dollars under the council's purview. So let's look at the bill itself. What stays the same and what changes? So House Bill 4134 maintains key elements of our strategy to help at-risk youth. You have community-based planning, programs, and partnerships. The bill also keeps the designation of a lead planning organization by each county commission and tribal government. The bill also maintains a clear definition of the target population, so we prioritize resources to meet their needs. On page one of the bill, you'll see the risk factors used to identify at-risk youth, including failure in school, which is no doubt affected by all the other risk factors, antisocial behavior, poor family functioning, substance abuse, and negative peer associations. The risk factors for assessing youth are not changing with this bill. These are the risk factors currently used to assess youth for needed services. The bill also guarantees that every county gets some level of allocation. That is continuation of what we currently do now. And while it's not necessarily in the bill, it is not touched and is existing in other statutes, it's really about continuing to focus on evidence-based programs and a focus on outcomes. So while you don't see it in the bill, that's not changing. We want evidence-based programs. We want to focus on outcomes. So what does the bill change, and which is most the source of the anxiety from certain stakeholders? What changes is the process for allocating funds. Currently, juvenile crime prevention dollars are distributed automatically every biennium to each county government based on each county's population of children and youth. Simple formula. The bill would establish a two-year grant process instead. Counties and their local partners are still in the driver's seat in terms of requesting the dollars. The bill also changes or clarifies that the allocation of funds would be connected to indicators of need based on measures of educational success, labor force participation, and criminal involvement. What I see is a further expansion of the connection with the risk factors and other indicators. The bill also, in addition to every county having a minimum grant, every tribe would also be guaranteed some level of allocation. And lastly, what the bill allows for is the ability to combine existing state and federal funding streams into one intentional pot of money focused on outcomes for at-risk youth. So to sum up, House Bill 4134 continues the core elements of youth investment funding that we have in the state: community-centered planning and program delivery based on assessing youth for risks, with every county and now every tribe guaranteed a minimum allocation. The main changes are a shift to a non-formula-based allocation process that allows funding streams to be blended and an opportunity to align funding with specific indicators of need. So, there's a reason the bill got drafted, and the governor and I believe there are thoughtful, reasonable things here getting proposed. But I know there are concerns, so let's talk about the Dash 4 amendment. Here are the concerns that I've heard. It's a very aggressive timeline. Implementing any of these changes on July 1, halfway through the biennium, is really difficult to do. I've heard that concerns about a poor process by the Youth Development Council to craft the proposal, which, to be honest, I don't completely agree with, but I recognize it's a criticism. I hear there's a fear that proven programs will no longer be funded because the guaranteed county formula is going away. And I've heard that there's a frustration that, quote-unquote, public safety money is being redirected to education. And I take a lot of issue with that one and find it not helpful at all, but just want to put that out there. So the Dash 4 amendment attempts to address the concerns while still moving us forward. Again, this is the culmination of at least 3 years of planning. So the Dash 4 moves the effective date of the proposed changes to July 1 of 2015, which is the start of the next biennium. So the changes go into effect next biennium. Accordingly, there would be status quo allocation of youth investment and juvenile crime prevention dollars for the rest of this biennium. This allows time for more community assessment and planning for a grant process that would start about a year from now versus a month from now. The Dash 4 amendment clarified something that in the draft that wasn't totally correct. It clarifies that each county, not just each community, I don't know if you noticed there, it says community and tribe, so it should be changed to county and tribe, is insured a minimum grant. And I think most importantly for the folks who have the most anxiety and concerns, it sets up a stakeholder process, a committee and a process to analyze how juvenile crime prevention dollars are currently being spent, identify how those programs would be affected by the changes being proposed, and recommend changes to make sure certain programs with demonstrated outcomes can continue to be eligible for funding. I would ask that the committee today adopt the Dash 4 amendments and move the amended bill to the Rules Committee for further consideration. So to wrap up, why should we do anything now since there have been so many concerns raised? I would argue this is a discussion we've had for at least 3 years, maybe even longer. As someone who's followed the Oregon Commission on Children and Families and JCP dollars, this isn't an entirely new conversation, but this particular bill is a product of 3 years of conversation. And I think it's thoughtful progress that's being proposed, and I would urge us to seize the opportunity to do even more for our at-risk youth. Not less, just continue to improve what we're doing now. And I also want to be clear, I will support the recommendations of the committee outlined in the Dash 4 amendment. I want a good process, I want a good conversation, and if there are recommendations that have strong support, I will honor that and try to help make that happen. I'm committed to that process, not just for show. I actually see it as a springboard to grow our investment in these types of programs. It's a real opportunity. I can't remember last time we were having these discussions about this population of youth that needs our help. So that committee should be seen as a springboard to asking for additional investment, in my mind. And frankly, I would love to see a larger discussion about juvenile funding. I know our subcommittee co-chair on the House side, Representative Williamson, shares that view. This just points out we have a system that could certainly use more resources, because if we're going to reach our 40-40-20 goals and help every child and youth in the state succeed, we do need to do more. So that is in the Dash 4 amendment. And finally, I just would ask everyone to remember why we're here and what this is ultimately about. We have school-age children and youth in our state who are not succeeding. They're not showing up at school. They might have a substance problem. They might be in a gang. They're certainly not graduating, and they're on a pathway to prison, not college. That's why this bill is here. It might not be absolutely perfect, but there's a reason, and that's about the children and youth of our state who deserve and demand collaboration among adults to figure out how we can do this even better for our state. And we're not going to succeed as a state if we are afraid of change or afraid of potentially doing something different. We can always ask ourselves how we can do better. And that's all this bill is trying to do. So thank you.
Thank you. Duke, did you have anything you wanted to add before we opened up to questions?
Chair Gelser, members of the committee, for the record, Duke Shepard from the governor's office. I feel like the speaker kind of said everything as well it could be said, other than, so on the record, this governor's bill, the governor supports the bill, support the dash fours. I think whatever that group produces, a lot of what's going on here is about the history. Some of the contention here is about disputes about who gets money in what ways going back 20 years, which is really not our issue. It's how we're going to move forward. But the dash fours would allow a process going forward to sort that stuff out and bring some finality to it. And whatever that group produces is what it produces, and that's what we go with. And so hopeful that the bill with the dash fours can move on. We might perfect it a little more and come back next session with an investment budget that really invests in communities. I would just add that one virtue of the process as intended by this bill and the Youth Development Council is to fully engage communities better than we have. And communities, not just providers, not just governments, but friends, family, neighbors, providers who have not been at the table before, communities have not been at the table before. And this is a process about opportunity to do better, and I think it does that. Thank you.
Thank you. Other Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Speaker. appreciate your time and your willingness to, you know, address some of my concerns as the bill moves on. Something that the Duke just said, and I don't want to go back and replow territory, but you know, as a rural legislator, sometimes I get frustrated, and the governor sends Duke to the, you know, down and says we need to do this, and I say, and Rep. Wisnett, you know, is probably more famous than I am for saying, but we're already doing that. Our commission is acting in our counties as you're wanting them to act, but instead of exempting us, where it's working smoothly, we don't have large budgets. We don't have large budgets to have duplicative services anyway, and where the commission and public health and all these guys were meeting anyway, but we need to redo it. But I digress, because that's not the bill before us. It was mentioned. And 3231 asked for YDC to go out and then bring back a proposal. And in my mind, the proposal could have been that a lot of counties are doing it right. They are spending a small budget on outcomes, and it's working. But you know, like with early learning, child development, we're pulling the rug out from under some of these very small counties. A lot of counties where, you know, the juvenile director is there, a staff of one or two. I mean, you know, it's not a big budget arena where we're going to make massive changes. And I do appreciate Ms. Bell giving, you know, reports and information when I ask for it. I really do appreciate that. But, you know, they're being thrown into a situation now where they're going to have to apply for grants. I don't know what kind of process that's going to be. I haven't seen it. I don't know how much time it's going to take. I think in one meeting I had, it's being changed where there are up to five different pots of money or five different grant opportunities that they could, you know, in some situations like Molly out of North Central Oregon and covers a large territory because of the North Oregon Correctional Facility, NORCOR, in the Dalles. She's, you know, her plate's full. They're using a small pot of money for making sure that kids are going to school, truancy, staying in high school, and we're changing something that I don't see needs changing. That's on the juvenile director side. I have the Dash 1 amendment, which you've said you would talk to us about, and we're going to present it today, of course, which only affects four small rural counties that have judges that are also juvenile judges. I kind of have a feeling that in some cases the plan could have come back from YDC that in a lot of the state it ain't broken, so there's nothing to fix, but we're hell-bent on fixing it anyway. And that's where my frustration comes from, and I just wanted to get that on the record.
Madam Chair, Representative Huffman, I really appreciate the comments. I do think there's value in making sure that every county, regardless of where you live in the state, if you're a child or a young adult who needs some help, that there's a set of standards for every county. I do think, and just so you know, I've seen the allocation request for last biennium. I know how people are spending their money. I think there's some really good programs. I think there's some questions. And I think all we're saying is, as a community, and say in your community, come together, come up with a plan. My guess is I bet you don't do too much different. You're still going to get some money. Right. And I have to tell you, I think the way we've divvied up the pot of money so we can have a small pot of money for innovation to try something new, it's a very small pot of money. There is specific money for gang work. And then there's this combined pot of money for youth and community grants, many of which are programs that will continue to get funded because they're showing great outcomes. I think the YDC has done a really commendable job, and we've passed out a lot of money in this building for grants, and some of them are pretty onerous. I see the, not to pick on the Department of Education, but I see their emails of all the strategic investments and all the grant processes that people are being asked to apply for at the district level. They are trying to make it very simple. I've seen the grant, what they're asking communities to do, and I've never seen anything simpler in terms of, you know, being very clear. It's not, they're trying to make it short and sweet. I understand that's a concern for small communities. There is technical assistance to make sure that is not a difficult process, and I think most counties will have no problem with this. Others, we're going to have to actually sit down with some people they probably haven't sat down with in a long time and have a good conversation.
Hi there. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Speaker, you just mentioned the technical assistance, and so I want to talk a little bit about that, and let me tell you why I asked this question. I heard a similar comment not too long ago regarding another grant process, and ESDs were given money to support certain processes. They were given $12,000. So can you talk to me concretely about what that technical assistance is, because it is an onerous process for some of our counties to move through.
And Madam Chair and Vice Chair Springer, I would actually leave that to the YDC staff, but what I would say is I think the value of the Dash 4 amendment is I do recognize that asking people to turn around a grant application in the next 2 months and be in the timeline that was being proposed would have been really tough. But the Dash 4s would allow for an entire year to look at that, look at the grant process, figure out how you can get TA in a timely manner. So I think it does make it better in that you're looking at a grant process that would start next year, not in 2 months.
Thank you.
Any other questions for this panel? Thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate the time.
So Representative Huffman and Representative Smith, do you and your guests want to come next? And just to give everybody an update on committee management, generally we have the courtesy of members making their presentations. We have to be out of this room in an hour and 15 minutes. We have 21 additional people after this panel signed up to speak, and we have three work sessions to do as well. So as you're listening and preparing to come up, think about how you can condense and share the points in your presentation so we can be sure to get to everybody.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Welcome. John Huffman, representative for House District 59, which used to include Sherman, Gillum, and Wheeler counties. Now I just have Wheeler County, and my arm candy on the end there, Representative Smith. is inherited Sherman and Gillum County. He also has Morrow County. And because of time, we're going to let Judge Perry do most of the speaking, but we do have a Dash 1 amendment that we wanted to introduce to the committee, and we understand that the bill will be taking a bit of a detour, but we did want to get the Dash 1 amendment on the record and ask for consideration at some point. Thank you.
Welcome.
Chair Gelser and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Patrick C. Perry, Wheeler County Judge. I'm here this morning to speak to the proposed Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 4134. There are 1,400 people living in Wheeler County. It is the smallest Oregon county in terms of population. That is a population base of less than one person per square mile. We are one of four Oregon counties with a county judge who is juvenile jurisdiction. As one of those county judges, I am here to tell you that I understand what happens in my county and which programs best serve my constituents. In particular, I understand the juveniles who end up appearing before me as juvenile judge in Wheeler County. I work very closely with our juvenile director, who uses these funds available from the state and Wheeler County for programs to serve our high-risk youth. We have a school-based counselor who serves three schools in my county. That counselor is the first line of defense in catching a problem when it's just starting. If the kid, the child shows signs of acting up, it's very important to have one of my school-based counselors there to start working with that child before they become part of the system. As a county that has retained its juvenile jurisdiction, we also retained a great cost of indigent defense and the cost of juvenile judge and all the court costs. In addition, we have a judge who is local, not 100 miles away, to deal with these cases. Wheeler County needs this amendment so that we know there is certainty in the funding of our high-risk youth and intervention programs and the people who work with these programs in our communities. While I'm here speaking for Wheeler County, there are three other Oregon counties, Sherman, Gillum, and Morrow, that have same concerns about the way their juvenile programs are going to be funded and what future they might face if this amendment is not included in the legislation. These four counties all are minimum allotment counties, which means we receive the fewest dollars to fund programs for our high-risk youth. Please consider Wheeler County and the other small counties because we are different. We don't fit the template of the local juvenile justice through throughout the rest of the state. With our local connections to our communities, we are very sensitive to the needs of our families. Please let us continue to provide the services that work best for our counties and communities. Thank you for your consideration, and I'll be happy to answer any of your questions.
Thank you very much. Representative Smith, would you like to add something?
Just very briefly, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm State Representative Greg Smith, and I have the pleasure of representing Sherman and Gillum and Morrow County, some of the counties that Judge Perry mentioned. What I would share with you is that these are small, rural, frontier counties with extraordinarily limited staff and a very limited ability to put together proposals, requests for information, et cetera. I stand ready as a member of Ways and Means to work closely with this committee to help you find the funding you need to be successful and to find the funding you need to make those accommodations for those small, rural, remote counties. We appreciate all your doing. This is tough work. This is really hard work. And as the Speaker of the House shared, and I agree 100% with her, we have one opportunity to help our youth, and that opportunity is now. And sometimes change is difficult. Sometimes it's needed. And I want you to know my office stands ready to work with you as we move forward. And I hope as this bill progresses down the path that you'd be sensitive to those most rural frontier counties. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much.
Is that it?
Great. Any questions for this group? Seeing none, thank you. Thank you for traveling and being flexible. I know that we changed the schedule on you, and I appreciate your flexibility.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Let's have, is Janet here yet, Carlson? All right. So let's start with Lori Bell, Audrey Giltner, and Susie Tracy, please.
Janet Carlson just came in.
We'll get you on the next panel.
Don't you that we're not just playing games up here on our computers.
And one of the committee members asked that I point out, because many of you aren't in the Capitol all the time, we're on a paperless system, so we have our computers open, and it's not because we're playing Angry Birds or whatever you do on your computer. The amendments are up on the, and the bill are all on our computer screens. So welcome.
Good to know. Thank you, Chair Gelsler and members of the committee. On behalf of Clackamas County Juvenile Department, my name is Lori Bell, and I am the volunteer coordinator for Juvenile Department. I'm here to introduce Susie Tracy, who will be testifying in regards to how our communities benefit from juvenile crime prevention funding. Clackamas County Juvenile Department has long existing community partners that serve at-risk youth as a result of juvenile crime prevention funding. So currently, these funds help to support 11 city diversion panels, which exist in the communities, and provide cognitive behavioral groups to at-risk youth in over 16 schools. So these are schools that we partner with to host these skills groups. Strong community partnerships exist with the availability of these prevention funds specifically. And I would point out that juvenile crime prevention funds directly impact our public safety. The Clackamas County Juvenile Department is opposed to changing the funding allocation administered by the Youth Development Council for committee-based prevention and intervention programs as proposed in House Bill 4134. So Susie Tracy is the current diversion panel volunteer. She sits on a diversion panel in Estacada, and she has served on this capacity for 3 years. She also is the director of Drug-Free Estacada Families and Youth, and she would like the opportunity to testify in regarding the positive impacts that juvenile crime prevention funding has created for her communities and the at-risk youth that she works with. I also want to introduce Audrey Giltner. She is a lovely young lady who has had the opportunity to participate in one of the skills groups offered through the juvenile department, which is also directly comes from those prevention funds.
Thank you. Thank you for the courtesy of your time. And again, I'm Susie Tracy, Director of Drug-Free Estacada Families and Youth and member of the local diversion panel. So just as a personal testimony, diversion presents young people with a one-time opportunity to avoid the justice system, gain an appreciation for second chances, understand the impact of their behavior on others, exercise positive behaviors in an effort to repair damage and restore balance for themselves and their victims, and then walk away feeling validated, valued, and powerful over their circumstances. Measured outcomes reveal that 89% of first-time offenders coming before local diversion panels do not reoffend. Prevention sounds simple by definition because it implies that we will simply stop something from happening. Why then do we encounter so many young people who have disconnected from family, reason, and self-appreciation? Prevention is a lot more than coloring books in kindergarten and storybooks in grade school. Prevention requires us to form a shield of protection around our children by doing whatever it takes to keep them safe at all ages. Prevention is seeing and listening and responding with a plan constructed of hope and wisdom. Allow me to share a mother's letter to her son. Dear Adam, if you were lost, I would come and find you. Do you think I do not know you are lost? If you were sick, I would nurse you. Do you think I cannot see your ravaged body? If you were injured, I would bandage your wound. Do you think your wounds are invisible? If you were frightened, I would comfort you. Do you think I cannot see the fear in your eyes? If you were lonely, I would sit with you. Do you think I do not understand your isolation? If you were sad, I would make your heart sing. Do you think I cannot hear your tears fall? If you were angry, I would listen to you. Do you think I cannot see the fight? If you were confused, I would erase the conflict. Do you think I cannot hear you ask for help even as you push me away? If you were blind, I would be your eyes. Do you think I do not see you stumble? If you could not speak, I would be your voice. Do you think I cannot hear your silence? If you were in danger, I would come. Did you think I would not come? I am your mother, I love you, and I am here. Will you help us bandage the wounds and wipe away the tears, erase the conflict, lead the blind, and break the silence? Will you exercise courage by taking a stand to love our kids enough to give them a second chance? Will you be the one that made the difference? Please make prevention a priority by continuing to fund the successful efforts of juvenile justice to increase school achievement, reduce aggressive behaviors, improve public safety, strengthen family help, and provide transformational and life-changing moments for the young people of our communities. That was my letter to my son, and it fuels my passion for prevention, diversion, and recovery. So thank you for listening, and we look forward to your support.
Thank you very much. And I noticed you have prepared comments. We've got about 20 more people we have to get through in about the next 30 minutes. So if you could condense, and if you leave that with us, we'll read all of the materials as well.
So can I just speak still?
Yes. Oh, I was noticing the three pages, but I was just suggesting you could hit the high points. Please. Thanks.
Okay, good afternoon. Thank you for giving me your time and the opportunity to speak to all of you. My name is Audrey Giltner. I am 16 years old, and I am from Clackamas County. Growing up, I didn't have the easiest childhood. I played softball and basketball ever since I was old enough to, and it helped me de-stress a lot. My father has never been a big part of my life. I have had a stepdad since I was 3 years old. He was an alcoholic and has always been very verbally abusive and yelled a lot. As I got older, I had anger problems, and I judged everyone before I got to know them, especially girls and adults. My eighth grade year was when things really went downhill. I quit playing basketball and thought I was unstoppable. I was going to do whatever I wanted, no matter what. I started doing things that were harming myself and my community. In January of 2012, the best thing that could have happened to me finally happened. I was arrested and taken in. A couple weeks later, I met my court counselor. I was at high risk, and for a few months, she let it slide by to give me a chance. I later was put on probation for further reasoning. I was signed up for Girls Circle, and for my community service hours, a group called ICE. The first day of Girls Circle, I considered myself better than everyone else. Towards the end, that was not the case. I was still headed down a bad path, but with a different perspective of life. With all the amazing activities we did in Girls Circle and the difference between each individual, I learned to not judge people before you know them. We didn't all become close friends, but we all accepted each other and enjoyed our time in group. We always had fun together, and through that, we were learning how to have fun in a positive way, and I believe that is very important for each individual to have in their life. The first day of ICE group, I was looking forward to meeting everyone and getting to know everybody because I knew that it would be a good experience if I went into it with a positive attitude. The community service wasn't fun, but for the first time in a long time, I felt good about myself. I made so many good, positive memories while attending these groups. All these groups are amazing because through groups like these, we all made friends while doing positive things for our communities instead of negative. These groups are very important because without them, I would have never gotten the opportunity to experience and talk with kids going through the same stuff I was going through, and I wouldn't have had a lot of the skills that I have now. Today I stand here healthier than ever. I've been clean and sober for over a year. My relationships with girls, peers, and my community is strong. I continue playing softball and have started basketball again this year. I average an A, B in school and have many goals that I plan to achieve in my future. Clackamas County's juvenile youth groups have made a huge impact on my life and taught me so many things that I am so grateful for. Without these experiences, I don't know where I would be in my life right now, and I do not want to know. Clackamas County needs to continue all of its skills groups and programs to give kids the same opportunities I had and allow them to change their lives around and have a better future just like me. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Audrey, that was great. Have you testified before a committee before?
No.
You're a pro. I hope you come back.
Again,
it was excellent. So actually, you're going to be on the next panel after this one. I'm going to go back and forth between the proponents and opponents. So Celeste Jansen, Kim Thrasher, and Neola Young, please. And as I mentioned before, if you have written comments, we'll take them, and I just want to get through as many people that are here as we can. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Why don't I go ahead and start since I'm already seated? Chair Gelser, committee members, thank you for this time. My name is Ken Thrasher. I'm on the Oregon Mentors Board, and I also sit on Children's Institute College Possible and Cradle to Career. So what I want to talk about today is why I think this bill makes sense from the standpoint of aligning funding streams in our state. As I kind of look at the big picture today and what we're doing in early childhood being leveraged by these youth development dollars and aligning those dollars, I think this bill does a good job because it starts to assign those dollars being connected with the needs of a community, especially those needs in communities where we have low-income communities of color and ESL-type needs, special needs that aren't being met adequately today. It starts to align those dollars along through the cradle or to the career and college possible in a way that avoids the back end. I look at this as a game of prevention, intervention, and retention. And we know what retention costs at $50,000 a year. We can't afford to go there. And so I think by putting these dollars in more of alignment, we can really do some things with these communities. And I think the /4 amendments, I think, not only provide for that community more involved in the allocation and connection of those dollars with the early childhood investments, but I think they do, I think Representative Huffman, I think they do, hopefully will meet the needs of the smaller community, because I do agree with you. There are some very great things going on in the small communities that we need to be sensitive to and not throw the baby out with the bathwater. Because I think as we've looked at from Oregon Mentors, the return on investment of mentoring and youth development at 3 to 5 to 7 times the dollars being invested, it's a great payback, and it's a time for us to really invest those dollars strategically with community-based programs. So thank you for allowing us to testify.
Thank you.
Madam Gelser and committee members, my name is Celeste Jansen. I'm the Executive Director of Oregon Mentors. Oregon Mentors is more or less the youth development hub for the state of Oregon. We're a nonprofit. We work with about 120 other nonprofits all around the state. We work with some standout models, actually, in Portland, Klamath Falls, Hood River, Bend, Medford, Corvallis, and all over the state. There are about 120 nonprofits that serve 60,000 kids with 22,000 mentors and about 1,200 staff members all around the state. These are true excellent mentoring programs. Oregon Mentors also works with the Portland Metro STEM Hub and with All Hands Raised. So there's starting to be a lot of alignment around youth services that we have seen in the last year and that we find to be very exciting. I'm testifying today in support of House Bill 4134. The reason why Oregon Mentors is supportive of this is that we really believe we need to use best practices in youth development in making our decision making. We see that this has a prevention lens and that we're focused on disconnected youth, those youth that aren't currently in school or having a hard time in school, not going into the workforce. We believe that we need to make sure that we invest in community-based programs that meet kids where they're at. There are some phenomenal ones out there. We want to make sure that youth voice and youth choice, those are the tenets in youth development. We know that's what makes youth programs work. We want to make sure that the community-based programs that are invested in have these important philosophy items. And also, look at equity. We know that there is big inequities among the way in which the kids don't have the same graduation rate, and we need to make sure that community-based programs, and there are excellent ones, are prepared in order to develop prevention programs that work for the state. We like that House Bill 4134 puts education and prevention services at the forefront. We like that it's a need-based formula, so it ensures that money is directed to children and families that need it most. And furthermore, and most importantly, we've seen that money has really shrunk dramatically, money that has gone towards these kids from 6 to 18. There's been a lot of money put into early childhood, but kids in the middle have felt like they've been left out of the conversation here in Salem. We think that in order to make an impact and in order to get more money, we need to have a system that's different than the system that we had before. Because the outcomes went to different counties and we weren't able to collect at the state level really meaningful outcomes, it was really difficult to talk about the work that we're doing in all around the state that we know is working. We like that this is an outcomes-based grant strategy. We hope that what that really means is that the outcomes that as applicants are applying for grants and as they're working in their community, we can get good information about how this money is used, and we can leverage this into more money for more youth-serving nonprofits and more prevention dollars.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Gelser and members of the committee. My name is Nola Young. I am the Safe Schools and Training Institute Manager at Q Center, a nonprofit social service agency serving gay and transgender individuals, youth, and families throughout the state, with emphasis on Multnomah County, Washington County, and Clackamas County. One of our programs is SMRC, the Sexual and Gender Minority Youth Resource Center, which has been serving youth in Oregon for over 15 years. I'm here today to testify in support of House Bill 4134. House Bill 4134 is important to SMRC and to me as a youth advocate because we support efforts to intervene and prevent gay and transgender youth from entering the juvenile justice system. As a community organization, we seek a combination of public and private funding in order to provide services for these youth and advocate for them in health and human service systems so that we can more effectively prevent their entrance into the juvenile justice system. Currently across the nation, there are over 300,000 gay and transgender youth in juvenile justice systems, including youth in Oregon, often detained due to community and family rejection that leads to committing crimes of survival. This bill would move resources into a model that allows more flexibility for community organizations to access funding streams that have not been available in the past. Community organizations across Oregon are doing incredible prevention and intervention work with high-risk youth, but need assistance in scaling up these efforts to keep kids in school. Gay and transgender youth are not the only youth who fall into this category, and we're deeply concerned about how health services and child welfare systems are dealing with children and youth of color, in poverty, and in rural communities. SMRC works to break the cycles of crimes committed in order to survive, to intervene in long-term homelessness, and to assist youth finding success in life by completing high school education or obtaining a GED. By broadening the availability of childhood investment and juvenile crime prevention funds, we have a much better chance at meeting the needs of youth and children most at risk of non-completion of school and cycling through homelessness and incarceration. It is our understanding that there are amendments about the timeline, and we fully support that. However, we want to put on record that we hope there's sufficient flexibility in the RFP process to reflect some of the challenges that we face regarding data about the youth that we serve. Even in state systems where data is tracked and available for race and ethnicity, poverty levels, and other data points, there is a significant gap in capturing data about gay and transgender young people in Oregon. We served over 100 homeless, gay, and transgender youth in 2013 and desperately want to see those numbers drop. We know, due in part to limited resources, that there are hundreds more of high-risk youth in need of these services across Oregon. We would hope that House Bill 4134 and the structure it puts in place would provide for sufficient flexibility to ensure that community organizations who do know best how to work with these youth at highest risk are able to do so in a variety of ways. Thank you for your opportunity to testify today.
Thank you all very much. Right, next up, we have...
Real quick. I want to publicly acknowledge Mr. Thrasher and I have known each other since the early 90s when we were working together, David Douglas, on an earlier round of educational reform, and he's been such a strong advocate for our community since at least that time. And so thank you for coming down today. And one quick question, observation. Do you see this as having a possibility to attract more funding eventually into this area because we have possibly a better focus on the needs of students and people in this age bracket?
Absolutely, because I think funders are looking for strategic investments today and not just funding a lot of small organizations that are new in startups. Mm-hmm. They want to see real quality organizations that have needs measured and have outcomes analyzed and then look at solutions out if they have gaps to fill those. So I think we are on the cusp of seeing more of those type of investments.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Huffman.
Quickly, it brought up a concern. One of the things I heard here is that this is going to be expanded where other groups are going to be vying for a small pot of money. So there's going to be more competition for dollars, which one of my concerns that leads from that is that if we've got a program that's working, if it's a competitive arrangement 2 years from now, that group is not going to have the certainty of those funds. And so programs that have been working in a community are going to be at risk if somebody determines that, oh, this program might work better and get better outcomes. So the certainty within a community, how are we going to get volunteers, hire people, and do the work that needs to be done without that certainty?
Thank you very much. All right, next up we have Janet Carlson, and I'm not meaning to rush us. There's a lot of people. I want to get through everybody. Janet Carlson, Alex Kyler, and Patrick Singh, please.
Can I ask a question as we come forward?
Yes, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner Carlson, I've gone through tons of testimony here, and I went through your letter and your flow chart, and I hope in your testimony you're going to speak a little to that flow chart.
I will. Thank you. Chair Gelser, members of the committee, Janet Carlson, Marion County Commissioner, so appreciative of the opportunity to testify today. First of all, I'd like to express appreciation to the Governor's Office and the Speaker's Office for putting forward the Dash 4 Amendment. I think it's a good step in the right direction. I don't think we're quite there yet. I haven't seen the Dash 5 Amendment. I heard about it. I think it just adds a tribal member. I'm fine with that. I appreciate adding county back into the bill in the Dash 4 Amendment, creating a task force on this important issue. I still have concerns about removing the funding formula before the task force does its work. I think that would be my primary concern at this point. Let me just address three main points. First point is that we have heard, and again, this may not have been testified today, but this is kind of, you know, the swirling around this, that counties are not embracing or accepting change. Let me just say, first of all, that we are more than embracing and accepting change. We are managing change, whether it be our work in early learning hubs, our work in healthcare transformation and mental health integration, workforce development transformation, community corrections, and House Bill 3194, and transform regional solutions teams and economic development. We are all about change, and we are right in the middle of it. And this change is no different. Second of all, I've heard that one of the concerns is that counties view this as sort of the last breath for local commissions on children and families. I want to put that rumor to rest as well. First of all, for many counties, these funds didn't ever go through the local commissions on children and families. Marion County is an example. It has always gone through our juvenile department. Secondly, the law changed in 2013 in the last session to say that this money goes through juvenile departments entirely. So that issue is put to rest. This is a very different debate than the debate about local commissions on children and families. And I'll tell you, as a past president of the Association of Oregon Counties and as a champion of the commission system for many years, I have heard county commissioners say, well, the commission system is state-funded. If the state money goes away, it goes away. This juvenile justice is a common core mission of counties. We did an analysis in 2005. I pulled out the numbers. 68% of juvenile justice is funded by county general fund. We put skin in the game on this. And so these dollars, federal and state, that combine with that county money, it's very important to us. This was also part of, in 1999, of Governor Kitzhaber's Juvenile Justice Initiative. It was one of three pots of money: basic, diversion, and prevention. I went to the summit in 1994 about juvenile justice and went to the Juvenile Crime Prevention Seminar, because I'm a prevention gal, and they defined juvenile crime prevention as after first arrest. I was floored. All right, this was a new definition for me. This was designed to address the needs of kids at imminent risk of going into the juvenile system in 1999 through the governor's initiative, and continues to be just that. It's a core service. I worked in the building as a committee administrator in 1999, attended all of the hearings, heard all of what went through, so I know my history is correct on this. Finally, let me just talk to you about this flowchart, and I'll leave to you to read the letter that Marion County provided to our own legislative delegation about where the funds go in our county and why we think that this is so important. The law, the way it was constructed in 1999, and that's under the column called Current Law, and Pam Curtis, Steve Marks, Mark Gibson were the three from the governor's office that were the ones that explained this in the hearings. Linda Wagner, who was with Lane County then, is now with GOBE, Greater Oregon Behavioral Health, was involved in talking about the research behind it. But it designated the county commissioners to designate a lead planning entity. And then that lead planning entity created a partnership called the High-Risk Juvenile Crime Prevention Partnership in each county. That partnership then created a High-Risk Juvenile Crime Prevention Plan. still have copies of all of the plans. The plan was supposed to meet the needs of the target population that's listed in the bill with the risk factors. Then, at that time, a different state agency, it's been Criminal Justice Commission, State Commission on Children and Families, now Youth Development Council, would fund the services specified in the plans through the formula grant to the counties. And then the plans would be coordinated with the other two pots of money, diversion and basic services. So you can see it's a very aligned process, and every youth that goes into that system gets a juvenile crime prevention assessment at intake, at 6 months, at a year to be able to determine how they're doing. Even the youth that were involved in the commission system were required to do that assessment. Now we have 4134, and I added the dash four amendments in parentheses after five last night when I got a copy of it. So the county commissioners still designate a lead planning entity, and then they create a partnership, and it was in the original bill with each community. Now it's with each county, so we appreciate that. They set priorities. The Youth Development Council reviews the priorities, and then they make recommendations to the governor, and the priorities are supposed to meet the needs of the target population. But no longer is there a link or a logic model between those priorities and the money. So there's a disconnect now in the bill between how that logic model flows and the money. So then the Youth Development Council in the bill allocates the fund based on indicators of need, the formula is gone, ensures minimum grants for each tribe and funded community, and dash four, it's now county, and then the council selects the community-based services based on the indicators of need, not based on the planning or the partnership necessarily, because the indicators of need are listed differently. So it kind of disrupts the flow of what was once a very aligned model. We have suggested in our discussions with the governor's office that, I mean, one option is to delay this entirely. If that is not an option, there are many, many, many programs that need money. This is a very small pot of money. It cannot possibly fund all the needs in the state of Oregon. Our Boys and Girls Club is one example of an area that needs money. Could move to another agency. I don't think there's time in a short session to do that. Could actually come up with additional general fund, if this is so important, $5 to $6 million, to be able to make that pot of money whole and continue to do the work that the juvenile departments are doing. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Alex, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Alex Kyler. I'm Lane County's Intergovernmental Relations Manager. Wanted to let you know the Board of Commissioners on Tuesday took an opposed position to House Bill 4134. They had not seen the amendments at that time. My intent would be to tell them, bringing back the amendment, the work group is good. The removal still of the allocation formula that's on line 28 in the original bill is still problematic. We feel that it presupposes sort of the outcome of a work session. The work group is designed to look at the effectiveness of the money. Why would you remove that formula before you allow that work group to do its work? We do feel that this bill has a number of destabilizing factors. Even a small percentage change in those prevention monies for counties is going to just instill greater pressure on Oregon Youth Authority to come in and perhaps backfill those kinds of programs. None of the committee members today have, at least in my knowledge, have sat on some of the public safety committees in the building. And I'll never forget seeing some of the stuff early on where Ed Latessa has been in the building talking about criminogenic needs, evidence-based practices. And I just feel like what we've got with our juvenile justice programs is such specialized and focused programs that the idea that we're going to broaden the access to those dollars, broaden the age scope for those programs, is just a destabilizing factor. And I think we've actually got sort of an interesting opportunity with the experience from House Bill 3194 from last session to look at justice reinvestment initiatives, lay that same model over the youth system. And I wonder, making a change immediately before sort of having even that conversation, does it pollute that process? And that would be sort of how I approach this to my Board of Commissioners with respect to the amendment. Again, I think we would welcome the work session, but keep that allocation formula in the bill that's now present in line 28. Thank you.
Patrick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Patrick Singh. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties, also here to represent the Oregon State Sheriff's Association and the Oregon District Attorney's Association and the Oregon Association of Chiefs of Police today. Appreciate the committee, the Youth Development Council, Speaker Kotek, and the governor and their work on all of these discussions, ensuring we have the best outcomes for youth. We have those same goals as well. However, we are opposed to the concepts that are in the introduced version of the bill. As you've heard, juvenile crime prevention dollars fund successful local evidence-based programs for at-risk youth. Some examples of these programs around the state: teen court in Benton County, diversion and service learning programs in Clackamas counties that you've already heard about, intervention and treatment in Deschutes County, student family services and homeless youth connectivity in Lincoln County, and mental health and substance abuse treatment in Multnomah County. These programs could be at risk if the funding proposal in the introduced version of House Bill 4134 were to pass, changing the formula to a competitive grant process, which our counties have a very big concern about. We remain encouraged about the discussions and the amendment to slow the effort down and also study the effects on our counties in a more in-depth manner. However, we remain cautious in removing any local control and local funding options that our elected county commissioners, in partnership with the sheriff, district attorney, and other public safety partners, have in providing the best possible services for our youth. We have programs that work, and we would like the ability to continue that work. In your OLIS system, you'll see written testimony from a number of counties, and you'll hear from a number of representatives from those counties today as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, next up we have...
Madam?
Yes.
Yes, I have a question.
All right, a brief question.
So, I don't know the gentleman's name. Is it Alex?
Alex.
Alex, if you could tell me, in terms of your organization, how do you define juvenile crime prevention?
There's a plan that gets submitted that addresses those at-risk youth,
mm-hmm.
and then those dollars are allocated by the Youth Services, which is now a division in Lane County. Some of those dollars do go out to community nonprofits currently, so there are flexible dollars for us, and they are almost like a precursor to, you know, some of the kids that have been actually adjudicated in the system. So they are working on preventative measures, and you can see there has been a number. In fact, going back, you know, as early as 2003, I think, the first report of audited outcomes of those JCP dollars by a research firm in Portland. So I think there's plenty of data to support the efficacy of those dollars.
So my question for you, and this is on, this is the dash fours on the second page. How there's on line three, it says, identify how the funding currently allocated to counties pursuant to ORS 417.855 for juvenile crime prevention is being spent, with a breakdown of the percentage of activities and services spent on prevention as compared to activities and services spent to reduce recidivism once high-risk youth connect with the juvenile system. So my question is, what would be the percentage split in your county between those two?
Madam Chair, Representative Gorsuch, I don't have that answer on the top of my head.
Okay.
I'm going to have to follow up with you on that.
Yeah,
that
would be fine.
I'm happy to give that information.
I mean, I think that's, Madam Chair, I think that's one of the issues here, is the question of what crime prevention means for many of us, because I teach criminal justice myself and have a background in law enforcement. For many of us, crime prevention is before you ever get in the system. Whereas I've heard from a number of folks coming to talk to me about this, that it's really appears to be to prevent them from going further into the system. And so there's a little bit, I think, of people not being all on the same page when we're talking about crime prevention. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. All right. Next up we have Roger Nyquist, Tori Lynn, and... Dan Crane. Crane? Crane. You can tell me how to pronounce your name correctly when you arrive. Please. With apologies. Crane. I will remember that forever now. And not because it's all of you, but just because it's 10 after 2 and we've got three other bills and a whole bunch of other people, I would urge you to be.
Oh my. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity, and the most difficult part of that would, for me and all the group that's here with me would say would be to be short. That's a difficult thing. when you want to talk about history, in our group, you get...
And can you say your name for the record, even though we discussed
Dan
the pronunciation?
Dan Crime, I'm the Tillamook County Juvenile Department Director, and also a former member of the JC PAC when the JC PAC was... It ended, even though it sort of hasn't officially done that, and was the Juvenile Department Directors Association member on the OCCF when OCCF was abolished. And I'm here to basically sound off along with a lot of others that you've heard, and I've heard a lot of things that I planned on to say already. I wanted to address the representative's questions about juvenile crime prevention, because I think that that's one of the problems that we've had. There was a committee that sounds like the Dash 4 committee called the Juvenile Crime Prevention Advisory Committee, made up of professionals in the juvenile system and also representatives from tribes and different agencies, public safety agencies, that made recommendations to the YDC before this process got as far down as we are now, before the funding proposal was made. And sort of addressing specifically what it says in the Dash 4 amendment is supposed to be addressed. And you'll find this in the Juvenile Department Director's testimony that was submitted, so I'll be brief. But collaborative community process, community partnerships and JCP funding, comprehensive local strategies, and sustain and support those things, sustain an equitable funding allocation for counties and tribes, which is the biggest thing I think that you're hearing from those opposed today, is it's nice that we're still eligible for funding that we get now. And I guess I would say that the history of this program is in the 90s, juvenile crime was the highest it's ever been in the state of Oregon and really in the nation. And what this money did is exactly what the state designated it to do. And recidivism has steadily declined over those years. And in response to Representative Gorsuch, is that right? Close enough?
Yeah.
That juvenile crime prevention is not a singular term, because our job is to prevent kids from coming into the system in the first place and prevent the kids from going that make it that far from going further into the system after we see them. And I think that these dollars have done a really good job of that. Recidivism is the most common measure, but I would say that referral rate is another good one to county juvenile departments, which has also continued to decline over the entire 16 years that there have been juvenile crime prevention funding. And I guess lastly, I would say, since this is the Education Committee, to take a look at examples of programs in where you're from and how many of those are partnerships with education. My favorite program to tout at this place is one I'm near and dear to since I helped build it, is Tillamook has Tillamook County, not just Tillamook City, has an educational options program that now houses all of the option programs, tutoring, truancy, all of those programs in one place. And that program was started with the original juvenile crime prevention allocation that's now fully funded by the educational consortium, which is the three districts in the county. It functions today without any JCP funds, so there's a lot of money leveraged in the counties with these dollars. And I guess I would urge you to take a long, hard look at fixing something that's not broke. And are we willing to make change, and are we looking to change? It's a constant thing. The directors have shown themselves to be leaders in looking at science in partnerships with OIA and in the communities about how to do our jobs better, and we try and do that every day. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Hello again.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tori Lynn. I'm the director for the Linn County Juvenile Department. I'm here also today representing the Oregon Juvenile Department Directors Association. There is written testimony that has been provided to the committee. So again, I'll just hit a couple highlights from that. The Oregon Juvenile Department Directors Association strongly opposes House Bill 4134 in its current form. OJDDA received the Dash 4 amendments last evening. We appreciate the willingness of and efforts of the Speaker and the Governor's Office to set forth a process for further conversations about juvenile crime prevention funding. While OJDDA supports the forming of this work group, we still have great concerns about the Dash 4 amendments. This amendment still maintains changes to JCP funding and statutes, only postponing those until July of 2015. OJDDA feels that any changes made to these statutes should happen after a work group does its work, and you've heard that from other testimony today. As a leader in juvenile justice, the juvenile department directors would also like to have further conversations about the work group, its membership, and the scope of work that they want to perform. You've heard a lot about outcomes today. A big outcome I think that's important to note, and Director Krein touched on that a little bit, is from 1998 to 2011, juvenile crime has dropped by 49.7%. Again, showing that the investment that was made by the state with these dollars is doing the job that we intended it to do. There has been 3 years of process, as was mentioned by Speaker Kotek. OJDDA supported money being placed under the Youth Development Council. We are very encouraged and look forward to participating in a process with the YDC in partnership and kind of helping determine how we would treat youth in our community. This process has not happened. OJDDA is requesting and welcomes conversations about JCP funding. We believe that decisions are made to change any of the funding structure. There needs to be a clear understanding of what the JCP dollars are used for. We can't support any legislation that changes the funding formula or JCP statutes without this conversation first taking place. And when you look at the populations of kids that we're talking about, prevention is very different from juvenile crime prevention. And again, it kind of goes back to Representative Gorsuch's comments that you're looking at two different targets. And, you know, one of the questions has been posed to our organization, are you the only ones that can do prevention? Absolutely not. Are we the ones that do juvenile crime prevention? I would say so. And we work in partnership with many different community members, schools, nonprofit organizations to help do that. The last thing we want is kids coming into our organizations as, you know, with referrals for criminal referrals. When they do come in, we try to address the needs that they have using a risk-based system, case planning methods to address the issues that they have, get them out on a good path, send them down the road, hopefully not to see them again, which is our goal. Putting ourselves out of business would be a good thing. So we would ask the committee to support JCP funding in our local communities as an integral part of the juvenile justice and public safety continuum. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Nyquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representatives Roger Nyquist, Chair of the Linn County Board of Commissioners. I will be your shortest speaker. I want to remind you that juvenile crime since 1999 in Oregon is down 50%. I would just ask you, why are you proposing to dismantle a very successful program? Anything else that you would do? If we could reduce obesity by 50%, if we could reduce cardiovascular disease by 50%, any of the challenges that society has today, having those problems reduced by 50% over a 15-year period, we would be celebrating that, not looking at dismantling it. I would just ask yourself if what you're proposing to do is likely to improve the track record of success we've had over the last 15 years. Thank you.
Great. Thank you all very much. All right, next up we have Mario Magana, Cheryl Johnson, and Josh Lathan? Lathan? Lathan. Rhymes with Nathan.
I think I have this in the sheet done, right? Yes. Welcome. Thank you, Representative Chair and members of the committee. I apologize for my English reading, writing, and speaking skills. My name is Mario Magana, and I am an associate professor at Oregon State University. And I am also the 4-H outreach coordinator for the 4-H program at the same university. And my responsibilities are to support youth, underserved populations in the state of Oregon, and also to create new programs that will meet the needs and problems of the Latino community and other underserved populations. And I'm going to summary because of the time. I send a handout.
Thank you.
So I'm going to summarize as short as I can. I'll read some information as well. Children these days are not making good decisions because our poor actions have created a negative environment for our children to live in. And sometimes our policies are the ones who are making this situation for our kids and families to end up in difficult situations in the future. We, the leaders of Oregon, are the ones responsible for creating a negative environment or positive environment for our children because we are eliminating the essential elements of positive child development. And when I talk about positive youth development, there are many things, just the environment itself they are creating sometimes affects, you know, how children are raised. Sometimes even the neighborhood, the schools, and the churches, and everything around them is it affects how they develop in their life. The school should be a place for kids where they want to go, not a place that children have to go. Peter Toll Educational Schools should be a caring and fun learning environment, not a place where kids, you know, feel harassed or discriminated against. So that sometimes, instead of helping the kids to motivate them to continue their education, sometimes it was forces kids to withdraw from school. The environment that we have created, it encouraged youth to drop from high school instead of encouraging them to pursue a post-secondary education and a professional career. We cannot continue putting our children in jail and putting our dollars in programs that do not support professional youth development. These practices need to stop and need to stop now. Incarcerating youth only damages their intellectual capacity, their brain, and their spirit of our youth. We are in debt with our children and families in Oregon. We need to correct ourselves or practices now before it's too late. Our children and families need after school and summer activities with intentional learning practices or objectives. Children need to have a purpose in life, feel welcome and belonging, and participate in challenging activities. If we do not create this type of environment, youth will join gangs or other groups where they will welcome, where they feel welcome, belonging, valuable, and important. What we can do, this is what I think we can do, but many other things can be done, but we need to identify programs and endorsing positive youth development, leadership, and caring environment where children feel welcome, valuable, and important. Create facilities that foster youth development after school, weekends, and summers where children can participate free of charge or affordable for families. Providing funding support for programs, schools, and organizations, providing after-school opportunities for families to inform, learn, get inspired, and encourage students to pursue a post-secondary education. Make sure to allocate the funding and resources in the hands of those who are directly supporting children and families at risk. And the last page is an example of one of the programs that I just designed this year that we are creating to encourage children to pursue post-secondary education. And the main purpose of this program is to help children to understand the educational system, explore career options, develop leadership skills, and do community service. And I would just say thank you very much for the opportunity to speak today, and I wish you support this bill.
Thank you very much, Dr. Magana.
You're welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Cheryl Johnson. I'm a program manager at Cascadia Behavioral Health, and I'm here today with Joshua Lathan, who's a peer intervention specialist. And we want to we're here in support of House Bill 4134, and primarily because it provides support for programs that are providing prevention and intervention services in the community. And what we'd like to share with you today is a new program that we work with called Healing Hurt People. Healing Hurt People was launched just last June in 2013. It's a partnership between Legacy Emmanuel Hospital and Cascadia Behavioral Healthcare. It's actually an extension of a very successful model, a national model for trauma and violence prevention and intervention. It's part of a national network of hospital-based violence intervention programs. This model's been replicated across the country in various cities, Baltimore, Milwaukee, Oakland, and Philadelphia, as well as many others. It is a trauma-informed, community-focused, hospital-based violence intervention that serves young men of color from the ages of 10 to 25 that have suffered a penetrating trauma, either by gunshot or stabbing. Our program is specifically designed to provide these outcomes, reduce emergency room recidivism, reduce re-injury, reduce retaliation, reduce arrest and re-arrest, but also reduce symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. And what's really great about this model is that it shifts the way that healthcare addresses the needs of young victims of violence from a criminal-based approach to a public health focus, a multidisciplinary approach with a psychosocial educational base. 45% of young people who've been hospitalized for violence return with another injury within 5 years, and sadly, 20% of those eventually die of violence. By intervening at the hospital, we're able to reduce repeat emergency room visits and also reduce healthcare costs. And the findings from programs across the country demonstrate that this hospital-based model has been very successful. Healing Hurt People, it has three main components, three principles. There's a golden moment, in-hospital engagement, and post-discharge.
Do you have some written materials about the program? I'm concerned because we're running short on time, and I'm wondering if you can focus back on the bill itself, and then I'd love to learn more about the program itself.
Yes, and we're happy to send you some information, but the issue is that this is a new program, it's innovation in that it's hospital-based, but the majority of the work also takes place in the community. And what's unique about this program is we're intervening with young people in the hospital, in the emergency department. It is a very unique partnership, and we're happy to send some information to you.
That'd
we work
great.
With clients in the hospital, and once they're discharged, we also provide them with wraparound services, getting them access to health insurance, and also providing them with a behavioral health assessment to really help them to understand how they've gotten to where they are.
Great. Well, we will look forward to learning more about that, and I understand that you're interested in the bill because new programs like that might have access through the bill.
And it's a new approach.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further comments?
I just want to wrap up by saying, first off, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Chair, welcome.
Members of the committee. one of the unique aspects of this
program. Can you state your name for the record, please?
For the record, my name is Joshua Latham, an intervention specialist with you, Healing Hurt People. And one of the unique aspects of Healing Hurt People Portland is being able to meet the clients where they are. And by that, what I mean is, you know, we can take appointments to the house. We can meet them at Starbucks, meet them at the local library, to somewhere where they feel comfortable and want to talk. Or another cool factor, I earn cool points with this, is we can communicate via Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, or whatever else comes out. So most of the time I know with the age group that I work with, they're sitting in front of one of these. So it's just real easy for me to go on ahead and set things up like that. But with this approach, we're able to meet the following outcomes over the 8.5 months since we first launched. There have been zero incidents of reported retaliation. There has been zero reports of re-injury and hospitalization. And we've had one single rearrest. Now, with this young man, he was rearrested the day he rescheduled his appointment with me. Long story short, keep your appointments with me, or you may end up in jail. Human Heart People Portland is consistent with other programs across the country that have detained positive documented results. Hospital-based violence intervention programs do work. And in wrapping up, I'm trying to zoom through this.
You're doing great.
HHP Portland is trauma-informed and evidence-based, lowers overall health care costs, increases economic opportunity and employability for youth, and increases access to education for opportunity youth. Please support House Bill for, well, you already know what I'm here for.
Well, thank you all very much. And next up we have Christina McMahon, Anthony Foster, and David Norwood. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Gelser, members of the committee. My name is Christina McMahon. I'm the Juvenile Services Division Director in Multnomah County. I have submitted written testimony to the committee. I'm not going to repeat all that testimony. I just wanted to introduce that in Multnomah County, we use our juvenile crime prevention funding to fund a very important program called Assessment and Treatment for Youth and Families. It is designed to provide evidence-based assessments and multidimensional family therapy to kids who have mental health or substance abuse issues and to families who need that counseling support. You've heard a lot about outcomes. We have a couple of outcomes with that program. 71% of the youth made academic progress and or improved attendance, which is very important to this conversation. And 82% of youth improved problem solving, self-management, anger management, and or coping skills. So I don't want the real star of this presentation today is I'm very honored to have Anthony here with us. He is a graduate of that program. So when we're talking about outcomes, I wanted to you folks to have a face of somebody who has really had an amazing success story. So I'm going to finish talking now, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Welcome, Anthony. And you can start by just sharing your name for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Anthony Foster. I'm 19. I'm from Portland, Oregon. And I come from a family where drug, alcohol, and gang violence is an everyday activity for us. And I was troubled a lot with a lot of stuff I was doing. Been on probation, went to jail and all that, until I got into this ATFY program and met this man, David Nord, right here. When I say he literally saved my life, I really mean it. I probably wouldn't be here sitting in front of you guys today. I wouldn't have graduated high school. I wouldn't have played college football or anything I've done since I met him. This program, it really does help a lot of kids in Portland. It helps us, you know, realize that there's other stuff out there for us to do besides the violence and the drugs and, you know, the little activities that we shouldn't be doing every day. And David really helped me stay in school. Like I said, he helped me graduate. I ended up going to college to play football. And just he helped me better myself. This program really helped me come out and not have to be another statistic like everyone else. So, yeah.
Thank you very much. Representative Huffman, briefly.
Go ahead and testify, and then I've got a question back for the director.
Just so you all know, this isn't just a job for me. It's much more. I believe working with young people is sacred.
Oh, and can you say your name for the record?
David Norwood. I'm a therapist with Assessment Treatment for Youth and Families, or ATIF. I have my master's in social work, and I'm a licensed clinical social worker, just so you know, and I'm licensed to do alcohol and drug and mental health, and we very much believe in a holistic approach, and, you know, doing whatever it takes is what I believe in. And again, I believe it's very sacred work working with our young people, their future, and also please understand that I invested, as well as the county invested, an awful lot of money for me to stay up with the latest technology, the latest research, everything else. And I've been very much involved in community beyond, so it's not just about the money for me. I'm very much involved in the community as well. Sometimes that means showing up at the hospital when sitting with a mother where the mother has her son shot in the head and I don't know if they're going to make it. Sometimes it's showing up to have a movement to stop the violence. Sometimes it's a resource for the police. Sometimes it's a community event. So it's much more, you know, we talk about prevention. It's much more for me.
Great. Thank you very much. And Representative Huffman, you had a very brief question.
Thank you, madam. I'm not sure. I'll do my best. Under 4134-4, would the funding for your program go away or would it remain for a period of time? And Are you at fear of losing the funding for a program that has good outcomes? And what would happen to the program if, through the competitive bidding or competitive process, if another program came in and was determined that it might have better outcomes than this program? Would this program go away due to lack of funding?
I think I've retained those. Number one, under 4134, thank you for your question, Representative Huffman, questions. Under the 4134-4, I believe that we would retain our funding as it currently is through the June 30th, 2015. So that would allow us to preserve this program for the next year and a half. In terms of are we fearful, would we have to compete, are we fearful about the competitive process, we have, as I said, I submitted written testimony. We have amazing outcomes with this program. I think that we could compete. However, as you've already heard from other testimony, there are a lot of other agencies and groups that are interested in applying for this funding because there are so many needs in our state. So the pool of who's going to be having potential access to this very limited pool of money is growing. So my concern isn't that I don't think we have the outcomes to establish that we have a good program that should continue in our community. It's that I don't know who else will be at the table also competing for that funding.
Certainty for a quality program could be at risk, and that's a big concern.
Right, because every day I hear stories like Anthony's, and this program has impacted people in a life-changing way. So, yes, we are concerned about the impact. And your last question, if we were to compete and we didn't receive the funding, it would have a significant impact on our program, and it might end up in us having to shut down the program or dramatically reduce our capacity so we wouldn't be able to serve as many kids and families. That is really critical in our community. This program is serving 60% of the youth who get assessments are youth of color. 53% of the youth and families who receive services are families of color, so we're very concerned about what impact this could have on our community.
Thank you, and thank you, Anthony.
Thank you. Anthony, you did a great job.
Thank you.
All right, we have 4 minutes left for this public hearing, and we have left on our agenda Jeff Milligan and Matt Morton. And we really do have to end at 2:40 because we have three more bills. You're welcome.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Jeff Milligan. I'm here representing the 18 counties of the Central Eastern Oregon Juvenile Justice Consortium. I've scratched out so much stuff, I'm not sure I can read. Representative Huffman already articulated a lot of the issues of rural counties. Our juvenile departments are also part of the Directors Association, the testimony that you already heard from, especially from Tori Lynn. Our people wanted to thank you, Representative Huffman, and also Representative Wisnett, for your paying attention to this issue and really looking at it through that rural lens. We are supportive of the Dash 4 amendments because it'll give us an opportunity to look at what's being proposed as well as preserving what's already in place. There's a lot of confusion about how things are going to work or not work. And I think, Representative Gorsuch, your comments are real key with this in what is juvenile crime prevention, because there's a real confusion. That's a great comment you made. And also, another part of that is, what is the role of juvenile departments? Because there's some feeling, well, they just lock up kids. But you heard from Multnomah County and other counties that juvenile departments are playing a very strong role in moving more and more services to community wraparound systems in schools and in other places. And I would just say one of the lessons we've learned in rural communities, given the focus of this committee, is the partnership between schools and juvenile departments and related partners has been key. Our smallest three counties in our region, Gillam, Sherman, Wheeler counties, are using their JCP money to fund a mental health counselor in each of the schools. They're also doing a tutoring and mentoring program in each of the schools. Those are the three smallest counties. And that then allows the one-person juvenile department in all three of those counties, along with mental health, DHS, other partners, to really target youth who are really in need of services to prevent them from getting in trouble. So that's been very important because juvenile crime and youth problems in a rural community is very visible. But the nice part about rural communities is they really support youth and want to see them get retracked. So there's more I could say, but we're out of time.
Just
I want to give my associate here time. So, hey, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify on behalf of all the counties from Hood River down to Klamath East. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak. My name is Matt Morton. I'm the executive director of an organization in Portland called the Native American Youth and Family Center. We serve the four-county area around Portland. I also have the privilege of serving as the chair of the Youth Development Council, and it's been a fantastic opportunity today to hear the voices at this microphone, so thank you for letting it happen. There are two things that I really wanted to bring up today. After scratching through all my other notes, I think most of it has been hit, but things I want to respond to. One is a comment a question that was made. If it ain't broke, why are we trying to fix it? And I think that is an interesting thing to consider. The first thing is that I guess it depends on perspective. For example, if you're concerned about minority or disproportionate minority contact, in fact, you might be looking at a system that could use some tweaking. And I would recommend taking a look at a system that, in fact, has some of those needs to tweak along the way. The second thing, and I think this is really important, is no one and nothing, including the legislation, suggests that good, effective programs will not be funded, which really leads me to another, my second and last issue that I've heard today, and that's that the objections that I've mostly heard regarding the work that the Youth Development Council has put forward has really been around one thing, and that is retaining an exclusivity towards resources. And I guess my challenge, my question is, as Oregonians, as those working for the communities here in Oregon, should we be vetting our programs? Should we be guaranteeing some sort of accountability and building strategies towards that in our communities? And I think that's what this legislation offers. So thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much. So we had a little bit of a mix-up. There were others who had signed up that were on a different bill. I need to go through some work sessions first, and then if we have time before we lose the room, we'll come back. We've got to get through the work sessions first. It's our last hearing, and we didn't have them on the list, unfortunately. So, colleagues, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4134, and I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 4134. Clearly, the bill, it's been a really good discussion today from people that I think share a lot of common concerns about youth, about very vulnerable youth, and this conversation needs to continue before the bill is ready to move forward. What I'd like to do today is go ahead and adopt the Dash 4 amendment in order to give some clarity around county versus community and to push that timeline back, and then move the bill without recommendation to the Rules Committee where the conversation can continue rather than trying to rush to make a decision today. I think many people on the dais have questions and want to continue the conversation. So, Representative Reardon, could you please move the Dash 4 amendment?
Chair Gelser, I move to adopt the Dash 4 amendments dated February 11th, 2014.
Representative Reardon moves to adopt the Dash 4 amendments dated February 11th, 2014. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Representative Huffman.
I can't support the amendment because there is the part in there about the leaving the funding portion in it for a limited period of time, having the work group. I think that needs to come out. If we're going to have a work group, we need to look at the whole thing, and so I can't support the Dash 4s.
Okay, thank you. Any further? Yes, Representative Parrish.
So I'm going to be a no, even for both the amendment and also moving it forward. I don't appreciate in our process that this bill is really important. we just heard all this testimony, and then it's going to go to rules where a whole bunch of people aren't going to hear the testimony to make that decision and continue the conversation. So I appreciate where people want to go with this. I'm just going to be a no on the whole darn thing today.
All right. Thank you. Any further discussions on the Dash 4 amendment? Seeing none, Debbie, could you please call the roll on the Dash 4 amendment?
Representative
Fagan. Aye.
Representative Gomber.
Aye.
Representative Gorsuch.
Yes.
Representative Huffman.
No.
Representative Parrish.
No.
Pardon?
No.
Representative Wisnant.
Excused.
Vice Chair Reardon.
Yes.
Vice Chair Springer.
Yes. Having received the required... yes, I... Having received the required votes, the motion passes. The amendments are adopted. Representative Reardon, could you make a motion without recommendation to rules, please?
Chair Gelser, I move House Bill
3. Wait. Are there any other motions before we go on to the... Okay. Representative Reardon.
Chair Gelser, I move House Bill 4134 as amended and without recommendation to the Committee on Rules.
Representative Reardon... Okay. Representative Reardon moves House Bill 4134 as amended and without recommendation to the Committee on Rules. Is there discussion?
Mm-hmm.
Representative Huffman, then Gorsuch, then Springer.
I'm going to be a no for a couple of reasons. Most of them I've already stated. One is I want to send a message to Rules, assuming that the bill is going to go there, that, you know, I'm concerned about the Dash 1 amendments plus everything else that, you know, which we weren't able to address today, really. Thank you for hearing them, though.
And you're welcome to move them if you want to move them and go through that process.
For them to be voted down,
right.
Or?
Yeah.
We need to move on.
Okay.
So.
Yes,
turn. Okay. All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. So what we're sending down includes the funding formula that people haven't been terribly excited about. Is that correct?
But
it leaves it intact, even though the work group will be working on this?
Yes.
Okay. I would just say that I would say that's not a good way to go, but that's now I'm on the record. So.
All right. Thank you. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just very briefly, a couple points that came up today that I just want flagged as this moves to rules, and I appreciate the motion without recommendation. I do have some heartburn about this issue. I can support the amendments because I've heard some of my county people say this was progress in the right direction, and I hear that and I honor that. Certainly, I did not hear from them that they're pleased, but at least moving in a direction. But I had the question. There was not the opportunity to get a clear answer to it, which I wanted defined clearly the technical assistance that's been talked about. That's something that has to be clarified for me. And so certainly I send that message to the Rules Committee. The other thing is we talked about, because of the way of the current structure, we have mental health workers in some of our schools, which is an issue we've worked on together, not getting them into the schools, but a bigger issue there. And that is so incredibly important to me that I'm not willing to jeopardize that. So I will be a no on this vote, and I send those two messages to the Rules Committee to please consider them carefully.
Great. Thank you.
One really quick thing. When it goes... Assuming it goes to rules, will people be able to testify in rules?
I don't chair the Rules Committee, but I would guess that there would be a public hearing in rules.
So I would encourage people to go to rules. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Further really quick discussion?
Just a quick comment. I think I've listened really hard to this whole thing, and I think the Dash 4 is actually a decent bridge to having a good conversation about future funding and how that's going to happen. I'm also an optimist. I think this whole system will allow us to do a better focus on the needs of the youth and how that system integrates with the other educational services that happen. So I just want to be sure we really keep our eye on the current programs that are working very well, and especially the needs of the smaller rural communities. So we need to really watch that. I think we have a path ahead.
Great. Thank you very much. Debbie, could you please call the roll?
Representative Fagan?
Yes.
Representative Gomber?
Aye.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative Huffman?
Nope.
Representative Parrish?
No.
Vice Chair Wisman?
No.
Vice Chair Reardon?
Yes.
Vice Chair Springer?
No.
Chair Gelser?
Aye. Having received the required votes, the motion passes and the bill goes to rules. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 4134, and I'd like to open up a work session on House Bill 4127. Richard.
House Bill 4127 requires that the majority of members of the Oregon Education Investment Board be public educational professionals. The committee has considered the Dash 1 amendments, and we heard this bill earlier in session.
Great. Representative Reardon.
Chair Gelser, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 4127, dated February 6, 2014.
And if you could all take your conversation outside, we're still working. Thank you. Representative Reardon moves the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 4127. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection to the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 4127? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Reardon.
Chair Gelser, I move House Bill 4127 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Reardon moves House Bill 4127 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Parrish.
So I'm going to be a no on this today. We heard in testimony when we heard this bill, and I asked Nancy Golden about the need to do this right now ahead of the OEIB sunsetting, and her testimony, as I heard it, and I clarified with her afterwards, was that it's premature, and that right now there's really no need to do this, and I would like to actually give the existing structure an opportunity to work and see how that works. And I just think that coming in with no cause, nobody testified that there was a problem in the current structure. So in my mind, coming in with no cause to make a change, and I'm really not clear about the undertone of why the bill is being brought forward, it doesn't make any sense to move this right now at this time. I'd like to continue to give the current structure an opportunity to work. That was the deal that was struck in 2011, and that's why we have a sunset on it, so we can come back and revisit it, not to come tinker halfway through and keep trying to solve problems that right now, frankly, don't exist. So I'm going to be no.
All right. Thank you. Any further discussion? Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In an effort to be consistent, which I try, I had a similar board-related bill in another committee that I was a no on, so I need to be consistent and be a no on this, because I was going to say exactly what Rep. Parrish said.
All right. Great. Thank you very much.
I bet this is going to pass, though, isn't it?
I don't know. Let's call the vote and see what happens, unless anybody wants to talk some more. Seeing no further... Representative Wisnett.
Could you please tell us what Dash 1 does? Summarize.
We already adopted the Dash 1.
I did.
But you can still tell us what we did. This is the vote on the bill.
Representative Wisnett, Dash 1 requires two of the four members that work or have worked. Requires that two of the four members work or have worked on a regular basis in education on the board.
It didn't change that there had to be a majority. It still has to be a majority.
The majority is in the bill. The two of the four member requirement is in the amendment, which requires that they be or have been teachers licensed under the relevant ORS.
No. We're not there. So did the speaker listen? Is it less than seven now? It's not less than seven. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Debbie, would you please call the roll?
You're right.
Representative Fagan?
Yes.
Representative Gumber?
Aye.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative Huffman?
No.
Representative Parrish?
No.
Representative Wisman?
No.
Vice Chair Burton?
Yes.
Vice Chair Springer?
No.
Chair Gelser?
Aye. Having received the required votes, the motion passes. And that's what I was thinking. Can I get back to you with a carrier? Do I have to tell you a carrier right now? Okay. It's the speaker's bill, so let's say COTEC for now, and I can change it if we need to. Okay. Thank you. All right. So I'm closing the work session on House Bill 4127, and I'm opening up the work session on House Bill 4062. Representative Frederick, do you want to come on up? A work session. Do I have to open the public hearing? Okay, I'm opening the public hearing, I'm closing the public hearing, and I'm opening the session.
Thank you, Chair Gelser, members of the committee. I'm Representative Lou Frederick from North and Northeast Portland District 43. I am back with a substantially worked over House Bill 4062. I sent you all a memo outlining the changes made in the various iterations of the bill. I believe that there are still two sticking points with the Oregon Department of Education and to some extent the Oregon School Boards Association, but I want to explain why the bill is where it is on those two issues. That should have arrived. It's a dash five.
And Lou, I'm going to ask you to, another committee starts in here in about 6 minutes, so I'm wondering if we can jump to the conclusion of what we're going to do.
All right, I'll jump to the conclusion of what we're going to do. I think that, frankly, this bill doesn't address every concern that parents, advocates, and experts have raised regarding the privacy and security of student records. It doesn't address all of mine by any means. I think at this particular point, we're going to need to deal with several other issues, and the work group is, I think, appropriate in this. But I do want to say that several issues continue to be brought up. We had a lot of effort by LC and LFO and other folks to try to help us with this. The Department of Education, School Boards Association, a number of other people were involved. Secretary of State. The last thing was an early learning system question, birth to five. They're concerned about the data going into that. I'm concerned about the data going into that as well. It seems to me that it should give us pause that we've embarked on initiatives that involve the collecting and storing of data from children without planning to protect those young people. I suggest that we have a work group that works during the interim that will have people come together. Simply in this short period of time, we've not been able to get some of the things together, although it's been an effort by lots of people to try to do some things and to get some of the concerns addressed. So I would propose that we make this a work group.
And thank you, Lou. Representative Frederick, we talked about this earlier today. I also talked with Dr. Golden and her chief IT person, and they've agreed to be part of that work group. And I will go ahead and schedule updates from that group on our interim committee so that we can know that we're making progress on the issue and the questions around it. I know this is a topic of great interest to, I think, everybody at the dais, and I know Representative Parrish in particular has some interest around this. So thank you for launching this out there. I'm sorry we didn't get there this time, but I think you started the conversation in a good way, and we should all expect to talk about
it. I just got a note saying that I have an appointment with Dr. Golden sometime this week. So
excellent.
I think everything's fine. Thank you
very
much.
Thank you very much. And with that, we're going to close the work session on House Bill 4062. All right, and do you want to come up? And with that, we are adjourned.
I'm sure.
Wahoo!
Would you entertain a motion for Representative Wisnett to vote on the Dash 4 amendments?
Oh, I would have, but we adjourned. I'm sorry.
We're already done.
We're not voting on it?
We're not voting on it. We're doing, there's no work group in the amendment. It's just we're making
right.
Work.
Yeah.
Have a good one.
No work group in the amendment. It's just we're making
right.
Work.
Yeah.
Have a good one.
There's